Welcome back, everybody. It's another episode. I don't know what number we're on. 100 and Johnny knows.
119, 120, something like that.
Something like that. But it's a lot.
4,722.
It's a lot. And it's been a lot of fun. And one of our favorite guests is back, at least for the second time. Maybe the third. I'm not sure. I think the third. Colleen Minnick. And, you know, we were kidding before we started recording that we only see each other in the field and on podcasts. And maybe one day we should have like a podcast reunion somewhere, John. What do you think?
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Yeah, it would.
That'd be a blast.
But you know, we could, anyhow, folks, thank you for being here. Thank you for taking some time to listen to the podcast. And without further ado, for those of you who don't know Colleen, we're going to go into what she's up to and where she's going with some new ideas. But Colleen, thank you for being here, taking some time. Could you just briefly tell everybody about yourself and what you do in our world?
Yeah, so thank you so very much for having me on. It's always so much fun to talk with you both. And so, yeah, happy spring. My name is Colleen Minnick. I am calling in from the world headquarters of CMS Photography, which is my home office in Chandler, Arizona. And I never intended to be a photographer. I am actually an ex-software engineer. I worked for Intel for about 10 years as a software engineer, and photography pulled me out of the rat race. And so I've been a full-time freelance photographer, writer, publisher, instructor, speaker, stand-up paddleboarder, bubble lover, river rafter. Like that. Yep. The way life has turned has been quite exciting. Certainly not anything that I planned, but I have been out of in the freelance world on my own for 17 years. I just celebrated my 17th personal Independence Day.
Wow.
On February 28th.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a little bit hard to believe, quite honestly.
Yeah, but it's great, isn't it?
Yeah. It's
You're not going to get fired on Friday.
No, I mean, my boss is a little bit kind of hardcore sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I have these staff meetings every morning, you know. My staff, they want more time off. I can't do it. They want to make more money. I can't do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, talk to management about it.
Yeah. I'll have my girl. That's your girl.
Well, yeah. So right now I'm really, you know, the path has changed over time. You know, I started with art shows. I've done editorial work. I still do editorial work, stock photography, commercial work. I don't do a lot of commercial work anymore. But I've kind of dialed in right now that my kind of formula for fulfillment, if you want to call it that, is really teaching photography workshops, which is one of my true loves. Writing books, and I have a new book coming out this summer, and doing speaking engagements. And so when I look at my path moving forward, those three major veins are kind of what I want to continue pursuing with, you know, full naive enthusiasm and vigor. So
you have a really good background in publishing. I know you did one or two of Guy's books.
Of Guy's, yeah. Another Day Not Wasted, Guy Tall. Yeah, yeah, our mutual friend.
So, you know, at least you don't have to. Are you going to? You're doing your own book, obviously.
I am going to publish it.
You won't have to deal with.
Yeah, I think it's like the eighth, or it could be the tenth. I think it's my eighth book, and I think it's the tenth book that I have published. Total.
At the end, we're going to put some links up, but, you know, I'm sure the new book is going to be really good. But, you know, Colleen's done, let's see if I remember, you did Acadia, and you've updated that once or twice. And that book is called what?
Photographing Acadia National Park, The Essential Guide to When, Where, and How. And yeah,
Folks, if you're going to Acadia, don't even think about it, just buy the book. Yep. Because it'll save you a million hours. Colleen's been there many, 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 many times. I know we've seen each other up there a couple times.
We have.
Yeah, and just please buy the book. What else other than Acadia?
So I have Wild in Arizona, photographing right. Arizona wildflowers. So you can see my flowers in my background right now. That was my very first guidebook, and we've done two editions of that.
Yep.
I've got Seeing the Light in Outdoor Photography, which is an instructional ebook. And then I have The Current Flows, Water in the Arid West, which was an exhibit catalog. The exhibition was curated by Gene Falk Adams.
You were nice enough to send me a copy of. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for your support on that. Yeah, it's... it was curated. It was an exhibition curated by Ansel Adams' daughter-in-law, Jean, and... we realized, because it was kind of at the tail end of the pandemic, that not a lot of people were going to be able to make it to the actual exhibit, so we did a catalog for that. So, and then the new book is called So Said the River, Life, Loss, and Pie on the Colorado.
Are you still going to do your rafting trips?
Oh, yes. I'm sold out this year. I'm even actually sold out for next year, and I haven't even announced
it. Wow.
And folks, again, get on the list, because... I actually had a very dear friend, Jerry Emery, if you're listening to this.
Yeah, Jerry was amazing.
Hi, Jerry. Jerry listened to the podcast. Jerry was on the trip and had rave reviews.
We had such a great trip.
It's always nice when I can see someone with another workshop leader that I know come back and have nothing but good things to say. So that was great.
Jerry, it was a great trip. It's always a great trip.
Yeah.
This year will be my 9th trip in 9 years.
The thing is, you know how to do that trip, you know. And again, we were talking about people getting into the workshop business who just are new at it. And John and I see people going to like Olympic National Park in August. Why would you want to do that?
Right.
It's sunny every day. You're in a rainforest so you go where you know, and we go where we know, and that's why people should do your trip. I know it's sold out for a while, but I know you have a waiting list, and you know how that goes. Yep. I would get on it. It's a great trip.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where do we leave it? Are we up to speed about Colleen? Is there anything else that?
I think we are. There was one phrase that you used, Colleen, that I absolutely loved that piqued my interest, which was photographic fulfillment. Mm-hmm. Which is, you've been kind of on this exploration or this journey to scratch the itch, whatever that is, and you found it. So what to you is photographic fulfillment?
Well, I think that has changed over the years, John. I think, and I think that's part of the photographic journey, is what brings us joy and what fulfills us changes over time. And, you know, when I was first starting out in 2001, fulfillment was, you know, me getting something on my slide that was not not under or overexposed. It was in focus, you know, it followed the rule of thirds. And over time, as a part of my artisan residencies with Acadia National Park, I came to find more information about creativity and how we can connect better connect our individuality with our subject matter and with nature. And now it's funny. I think I'm more into this idea of experience-based, almost experience-driven photography, where I have to have the experience, I have to have the meaning first, and then I might make a photograph. I might not, but I might make a photograph. And it's funny, just over the years, you know, over my however many years it's been, 23-year journey, just how the emphasis on photography has just changed. And I feel like I photograph a lot less right now, but the photographs that I make are much more meaningful. They're much more interesting to me because they're more storytelling. They're more about a narrative. It's about a moment where I had awe and wonder and curiosity kind of all packaged up in one. And that's pretty different than just going out and, you know,
taking a
praying
pretty picture.
That you get something exposed. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it is. But, you know, and I think what you said in there that really resonated with me too was that connection with your subject or with that location, and achieving that connection, slowing down, which is what Jack has taught for many, many years. And that slowing down really helps you make that connection so you can bring more of yourself into your photograph.
I even take it now, Colleen, when I do my, we look at images in review sessions. Used to be very common, you ask the client, so what's the subject here? What's the subject? Well, that, to me right now, it doesn't have the same meaning. I ask them, what is the story you're trying to tell? Because the subject is part of the story. It's not really, you know, if you don't have a subject, you don't have an image. Well, I don't, you know, you don't have a story, you don't have an image. Story is where it's at. You're 100% correct.
It's story.
Yeah, and the approach that I use for critique is, to what are you responding and why?
Yep.
And yeah. It's all the same thing, right?
How many times, and I know you do this because you have, and I know in your workshops, you actually have some field exercises you get people to do, which is great. But how many times have you asked somebody in the field, why are you taking this photograph? And they go, I don't know.
Oh, all the time.
And me,
yeah,
and
I think well, that's if the you hard don't know, part.
Let's go have lunch.
Well, the viewers aren't going to figure it out for you.
No.
Right?
Right.
I mean, if you snap something, the viewers are not going to make any sense out of your chaos. So, like, I think that's, you know, we talk a lot about the technical aspects of photography. And don't get me wrong, things like depth of field are maddening and frustrating. And, I mean, it took me almost 2-3 years to figure out depth of field. But I think actually one of the hardest parts about photography is understanding
Amen.
That what's going on in your head.
Yep.
And I would argue, and I don't know how you guys would feel about it, but I would argue that paying attention, simply paying attention, is one of the most undervalued activities in photography. Like, you can know depth of field, but if you're not paying attention to the surroundings, but also what's going on inside of you.
Amen, sister. Amen.
Woo! Yeah.
I mean, so much of this creative journey is driven from within. And if we're not conscious and aware of what's going on inside of us, how can we impart and capture some of that in our surroundings?
Yeah, and I think it's important when we talk about, you know, using photography as self-expression, you have to put yourself into it. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, that you have to understand yourself, you have to know yourself, you may even have to like yourself. Like, that's scary, right? And being okay with saying, you know, I really love the way, you know, the wood looks versus what, you know, the other 14 people in my workshop are photographing, which is the scene over here. Like, that takes a lot of courage. That takes a lot of confidence to be like, no, I really want to say something about what I experience in this world. And what I have to say has value if to no other person to me. And that is enough on its own. And so
it is. I've got a little note. I keep a notepad next to my desk when I write down things that pop in my head. And one of the things I have written on it is translate and interpret. So around paying attention, right? We all see the scene. We all see the location in front of us, but we all need to translate and interpret what we're seeing and put it in our own words to then express it through our photography. And that's a very unique experience.
I love that approach. I love that idea that we're translating and interpreting, because one of the hangups I think we have is that, at least I did when I was first starting out, is that I felt like I had to recreate what I saw. And I thought that I was going to recreate it such that other people would see the same reality that I do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over time you realize that there is no shared reality. The only reality is the one that you're living. You individually are living. And so when you translate and you interpret, you're really honing in on your own experience. And, you know, maybe we're not going out to necessarily recreate exactly what we saw.
Right.
And making some creative choices and creative decisions, we're going out to, you know, understand ourselves better, understand the world better. Like, I can get into that idea of,
I mean, there's that old phrase of, you know, rose tinted glasses. And I think that sort of equates to me is that we all see the world through our own lenses. and those lenses are built on our own personal experience and knowledge, and how we interpret this reality around us is very unique to us. Just as you said, there is no shared reality. So how do I express my interpretation of what I'm seeing? And that's sort of my vision, if you will. But the hard part is trying to intake what you're seeing and then put words to it and then put action into your camera based upon the words that you generated for yourself.
That's that translation part. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like the hard part.
You figuring out the meaning and then, you know, understanding visual language and connecting verbal language with visual language. I mean, that's fun. Like we have an immense amount of raw materials that we can tap into. All of these experiences and backgrounds that we bring to those rose tinted glasses, like that's a gift, and we can use that. So long as we understand, you know, connecting that with human perceptions.
Yeah, and it's much more important to do that before you figure out, this is F-16.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, what you're figuring out in your head is going to determine the technical.
Yeah, what you want to say drives the technical aspects of it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Too many people start out with, well, I want depth of field here, and I want this, so I do this, I do this. Okay, now what am I trying to do?
Should be the other way. Yep, yep, I agree, Jack.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and I mean, an example of that, Jack, would be kind of your background. You've got these beautiful waves going on behind you. You know, in that moment, were you feeling, you know, strength? Were you feeling, you know, excitement? Or were you feeling,
I think I just had a gin and tonic, son.
Oh, well, but so how you feel, though, whether you felt like it was soft and flowy versus strength and power, like that's going to dictate your shutter speed.
For the people just listening to the podcast, they can't see us.
They can't see it. Oh, it looks like
a piece of ice. There's a piece of ice sitting there. See
there
that?
There you go.
Ice? Yeah. I wanted that to be like the main part of the issue.
The payoff.
So, you know,
it's a delightful payoff.
But kind of to your. Go ahead, Jack.
No, I just, you know, I mean, what was kind of everywhere else, but looking at that piece of ice in the foreground, I wanted a pretty wave and all that, but I didn't really care about it. I remember it being there. The technical end of that was at the very end of taking the photograph.
It's kind of an afterthought.
It was way afterthought.
Well, kind of what you said, Colleen, you know, what were you feeling? That's like the first, even before I get out of the car at a location, I'm already aware of what I'm feeling. Am I feeling energetic, happy, sad, strong, weak, timid? You know, any of those things, that influences my interpretation of the scene and the photographs that I'm going to make. And so being in touch and aware of what you're feeling while you're there and acknowledging that. And that's where I think you do the best work. You know, if I'm sad and I'm trying to make a happy picture, it's incongruous with one another. You know, that's sort of a bad example, but it gets my point across. And so being in touch with where your energy is, I think helps you be more creative.
And go ahead, Jack.
I was going to say, John's heard this a million times, so I just tell people, if they are going out, to get out and enjoy being out, and maybe, like Colleen said, maybe even making a photograph, I tell them, don't ever check the mail on your way out. Don't even check your voicemail. Don't leave your phone home, because, man, if you get some bad news, you know, you might be shut down from the ability to create anything. And that's okay, too, but you just got to know that. You know?
You
got to know what, you know.
Yeah. And, some people I've had feedback where people are just not really too excited about being in touch with their emotions, and that's okay.
Yep.
It's okay, but I got to tell you, it's a hard thing to learn. It's a hard thing. Some things are hard to admit that, well, yeah, I feel this way because you don't want to portray I'm not a strong person. Well, you know, it's okay to not be a strong. But some people don't want to admit to things, and it's really hard to self-evaluate yourself. It's really hard.
Scary, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's scary. And it not only is it scary to, you know, feel feelings and emotions, but it's even equally more scary, or maybe even scarier, to like put them into a photograph and share that with the world for everyone right. to judge. And so one of the things that I, to go back to the feeling part, is I sometimes use the word, what are you experiencing? What are you responding? Again, what are you responding to? What are you experiencing in this moment? And maybe they can define it as a memory, or maybe they can define it as a story, as opposed to I'm feeling happy, sad, you know, mad, glad, whatever that is. And so I think, again, it just simply goes back to perception. And, you know, we talk about photography being the art of seeing. It's really, for me, it's the art of perceiving. And that uses all of our senses, not just seeing. But you can make connections through smell, through taste, through hearing, like, and you can make photographs for any reason you want, as long as, I say, as long as you have a reason, mm-hmm. it can be for any reason you want. And so, yeah, I think that connecting with yourself is critically important when it comes to starting that connection with nature, and then putting it into the rectangular box that the camera manufacturers have given to us. So
especially when the viewer, when they see your photograph that you've gone through all these processes to produce, they weren't there. They can't feel the wind. They can't smell the smells. So whatever you're trying to do to tell them about what your view of life is, where you are, it takes something doing. It's not.
Yeah. And I bastardize an Eleanor Roosevelt quote in this regard, and I suggest that what other people think of your photographs is none of your business. And so, you know, like, I mean, ultimately, if we are really tapping into self-expression and we make photographs because they meant something to us in that moment, then really, like, what does it matter that people like it or don't like it? And I'm saying this being a recovering perfectionist. Like, I was a people-pleasing perfectionist for over 40 years. And so I used to do everything to just make sure that I got my attention and I got the check, you know, checkbox and the like on Facebook. And there is a whole nother way more fulfilling world out there than that. Mm-hmm. Like, John, this goes back to what we were talking about fulfilling, you know, having photography fulfillment. That's if you're making yourself, if you're satisfying yourself, then it shouldn't matter what anybody thinks.
So many people satisfy themselves though by having people tell them how great they are. And that's
which teach their own.
Yeah, I get
awesome.
It. Kind of, well, life is too. I guess when you get to be 150 years old like me, that's not as important as it maybe was 50 years ago.
Well, it's the whole. We're getting into
take that young guy and say, listen to us. We've been through this. It's not that important.
I mean, we're kind of getting into a little bit of psychology, but it's, you know, external validation versus internal validation of yourself, and I'm the only one that I can rely on typically, and so I've learned to give myself internal validation and internal criticism. You know, I'm my worst critic, but I'm also my biggest supporter.
Well, and so this is the evolution that I had to go through recently. This is what my book, So Said the River, is about going from overachieving and thinking that I at some point would please enough people with all of my achievements that they would grant me the keys to the magic kingdom of happiness. And of course, after checking every box, some of them twice, I was miserable and I had some life events happen, and that sent me into a whole tailspin of, I am alone and I need to figure this out. And like John, like you just said, I'm my biggest supporter now. I'm my biggest cheerleader. I'm my best friend. Like, that wasn't the case, you know, less than 10 years ago for me. And that's a massive, massive lesson. And, I'm glad we've all figured that out.
Yeah.
So you're writing this book about this.
It's written.
I mean, was it tough to do this, or was it cathartic?
Yeah, I mean, it started off as being sort of a cathartic exercise. I have attended to it almost every single day for the last 8.5 years in some form. It's off in proofreading now, so it's in editors' hands, and so I'm not really doing much with it at this moment other than starting to promote it, market it. But when I was going through what was arguably the darkest part of my little perfect life, it was my support system. It was, you know, I would write something and then I would be like, do I really believe that? Is that really what I want to be? And it was a way for me to kind of work through a lot of ideas. It was a way for me to process, you know, heavy stuff. And then at some point about 2 years ago, you know, I learned that memoir was an argument and that I was the example. And so I rewrote the whole thing so that it was a little bit more universal and less of me just, you know, journaling. And so hopefully now it's a more complete story.
Just to jump back a little bit, Colleen, this book is called So Said the River, Life, Loss, and Pie on the Colorado. And it was... this was a little bit of self-exploration, but it's sort of set around your trip paddling the Colorado River.
Yeah. So I did what I always did, which is try to accomplish something to prove my self-worth. And I had essentially two back-to-back failures in an 8-month time frame. You know, I'll put failure in air quotes because they weren't failures. They were major learning experiences. But as a recovering perfectionist, that was, you know, extraordinarily traumatic to not have things go my way. And so, life doesn't go according to plan, and sometimes there's a better path for you. And that's really what I find out is, you know, through the wind and the waves, sometimes happily ever after looks a little bit different than what we've been told. And so, it's been quite the adventure.
Who's your target audience? Is it photographers or just everybody?
Well, you can't sell a book to everybody. My official primary target audience would be middle-aged women who like the outdoors, who maybe have had some sort of life event. So like divorce, loss of job, you know, death, those sorts of things, adversity of some sort. I've sent the advanced review copies out to a fair number of gentlemen, and they're getting inspiration out of it just the same. So I, you know, ultimately the message that I want to convey is I want people to feel confident in their own authenticity, in their own journey, whatever that looks like. And so, you know, I don't want the whole world to necessarily run out and quit their job and become photographers. I want them to do whatever they feel compelled to do, and that the world needs less judgment about this, that we should be more supportive about embracing people just as they are, in the same way that I'm arguing in the book that we should treat the Colorado River just as she is, as a river, and let her flow. And so, yeah, there's a lot of different metaphors. There's a lot of different messages in there, but ultimately my goal is that is really twofold. You can find fulfillment on your own through adversity. And then the second is that you should have confidence in your own authenticity, whatever, wherever that takes you. And, you know, it's taken me, you know, 8.5 very long, hard years to figure that out. And I hope that by sharing the story, it'll help other people get there too.
do you have to go through, well, you say you figured it out. Is there something that we should be doing to keep not having to figure it out again?
Well, so I have a line in the book that says you figured out life when you realize there's nothing to figure out. Yeah. Like you control your own destiny one decision, one paddle at a time. And I got that from an interaction that I had, a woman with a tattoo on her wrist, when I took myself out on a date for one of the first times ever. And it said, control your own destiny one decision at a time. And I was like, that's it. That's the whole thing. Like there is nothing to figure out. Like you just keep making great decisions in that moment. Yeah. And you're kind to yourself and you're not comparing yourself to others. And you have gratitude about what you have, not being sad for what you lack. And there was a lot of things that never had crossed my brain as I was trying to check those boxes for achievement for 40 years. So, yeah. There's nothing to figure out. Just keep living.
That's big. So I got to ask, though, because I know you throw it in sort of as something to catch people's attention, but... why the reference to pie in the title?
You're gonna have to read the book for that.
Oh, okay. I get it. All right.
The moral of that story is eat your pie first. I'll let you read the book about it, but the moral of the story is, and I think it ties to this idea of controlling your own decisions. You know, controlling your own destiny one decision at a time. Eat pie first is that I was delaying gratification. I was delaying happiness because I thought if I just did a little more, always more, I would be happier. And the fact of the matter is that happiness, fulfillment, really happiness. I try to avoid the word happiness because I think it has weird connotations. But fulfillment and joy can be, it's around us all the time. If we're willing to create meaning, and we're willing to create connection, we can have that even when things aren't going well. Mm-hmm. And you know, let's be honest, the waves of life keep happening. Like they don't slow down just because you feel like you've been fulfilled, right? like stuff happens. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world, but you know, what do you want to say with this one lifetime? What do you want to say with this moment right now? Like, what do you want to do in the next 20 minutes? What do you want to do in the next hour? And so it's really, if you piece enough of those little decisions together, like it's going to be a pretty great life. And so again, this is coming from somebody who planned her whole life out on a spreadsheet. So it's a pretty major shift.
Well, I just got to say, I'm grateful to be on this podcast with you and with Jack. How about that?
I love it. Yes, thankful. I am very grateful.
Thankful for the little things we have.
You know, I tell you what, I'll take it one step further. We, like you said, John, we've had 120 of these.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And Colleen knows as many people, if not more, than we know that we've met through photography or whatever. And, man, that's what a blessing.
Right?
I mean, how lucky are we?
Yeah.
Well, and think of all the inspiration and think of all the ideas that you have spread. I mean, it's like joy multiplied, right? Like it's pretty remarkable.
And every now and then, you know, I get an email from somebody who, you know, I hadn't heard from for 6 months. And I'll say, Jack, you know, I was somewhere and I thought about what you said about this and it really, really resonated. And I hate to say it. I mean, for many years I had to make a living. I don't have to worry. It's not as important right now. I don't want to say semi-retired, but I backed off half of my schedule. But, you know, the financial end of this, when you're into helping people and teaching, and you know, if you're going to run workshops, you better love people and you better love teaching. Or you're gonna fail. But getting those kind of emails, that's so fulfilling. And it really, really hits home, you know. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of office work and permits and all the baloney that we do. But man, we're just so lucky. And I think that's why we've not stumbled on it, but that's why John and I have been so passionate about making this podcast not gear centric and
right.
filter for this and look for that, and it, more on the creativity thing. And I don't know, you know, we sure didn't start the trend, but we were one of the first to get into that. And that's where it's at, because that comes before everything else. And you better have your life together at some point. And it could be a minute before you pass on. I don't care when it is. It could be tomorrow, or maybe people already have reached that. But you better get it together one way or the other. And
well, I don't even know if I have my life together. Well,
doing what you just talked to us about so eloquently, as always, I think that translates into life.
Well, and one of the things, it's about freedom, and I think it's important to understand. At least it was helpful for me to comprehend that every single person on this planet, every single one of them, experts, beginners alike, we are all making this up, all of us. Yep. And so, you know, what you so said, the river is about, you know, voices of society. And I was, you know, listening to society, and who are they? At some point, you've got to say, who are they and who am I listening to? And so when you start, you know, when the voices in your head start to become a little bit louder, and you start realizing that, oh, maybe they, whoever they are, don't have any idea what they're doing either. Like, and so for me, it became very freeing to make up whatever path I wanted to. And it is a privilege, and it is an honor that I have that opportunity to do that as a freelancer, as all of us do here, right? That is a privilege, and that's a responsibility. But my gosh, like what a gift to get up every day and be like, wow, how am I going to, you know, work through this today? How am I going to, you know, make the world a better place? How am I going to help people progress in their photography today? How am I going to show people a phenomenally great time and beautiful locations? Like, I mean, like that's way better than sitting in a cube, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There may be people who love the cube, which is awesome. They should do that. But I think just being able to listen to your own voice, again, paying attention to your own self is so critical, whether we're talking about life or photography. Doesn't
yeah.
matter.
Well, you know, as you were talking, Colleen, we, before the program started, we were talking about creativity, and we touched on it a little bit here in the program, but you used the word authenticity, and I think about that word a lot when it just comes to personal stuff, but I haven't quite applied that word authenticity to photography, and that's kind of got me thinking. You know, I don't have any conclusions around that, but you know, creating authentic photographs that are authentic to me, and I think maybe that goes back to our comments around
define
connection to the subject and
define authentic for me.
Yeah, I don't know yet. It's an idea that's just popping up. But it's.
I think it's being true to yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Being true to your own inner voice. You know, people use the word like genuine, real. But again, it goes back to, you know, when you talk about being real, like you're being real per your own definition, per your own reality, because there is no shared. There's no shared reality, and there's like everybody has their own, you know, preferences and attitudes and interests and, you know, all those things.
It's all okay. And it's all okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but being confident in it too. Yeah. Not only is it not okay, but I would argue that if we don't get to see, you know, John's photographs, or we don't get to see Jack's photographs in your own voice, then I don't get to know you. Like I don't get to see that part of you. And I am never going to see the world the way that you two do. And by seeing your photographs, that gives me the chance to see something completely different. And I love that. I love knowing when I look at someone's photograph that I am I am peering into their soul. Like, I am peering into moments that meant something to them. For me, that's very exciting. And so it expands my world. It expands our worlds, right?
Yep. Agreed. So, Colleen, your book, So Said the River, when is it going to be out?
It should be out mid to late June of 2024. So it goes to print May 1st.
Excellent. So can folks pre-order it if they want?
I will have pre-ordering available in April, yes. So you can go to sosaidtheriver.com and you can register for that. I will give people a pre-order discount. It'll be out through my website earlier than places like Amazon, for example. And you can get signed copies as well. And I hope to have an ebook ready. Eventually, I would like to have an audiobook recorded. And so, yeah, these are all new ventures for me.
Wow, audiobook. That's awesome.
For sure. You should do an audio.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, folks, I'll put up links to sosaidtheriver.com and Colleen's website. So if you visit We Talk Photo, you can get all the links to where to go if you want to read more about this book.
Where are you going next, Colleen? Do you have any trips planned?
Yeah, I leave for Big Sur, California in 3 days.
You're going to have flowers.
I just got back from Moab, southern Utah, and so yeah, it's just on to the next. So
how is Moab? Is it crowded? Is crazy crowded down?
Well, you were talking about timing. I actually go early March to stay away from the crowds. That said, even during the week, although somebody said it might have been spring break, during the week, like Moab Arches had like a half an hour wait to get into the park. Wow. Midday. We weren't doing that, but midday it was quite crowded. So, which was surprising for March. Usually it's that way, you know, a little bit later in the year, but March we had some pretty interesting weather and a fantastic time. And yeah.
Excellent.
Well, good for you. Yeah. Well, thank you for being here. Let's not make it, it was a year or 8 months, whatever it was.
I think it was almost 3 years, Jack. No. 2 years.
Wow.
It was 21. Sorry. Was it 22? 21.
All right. We'll have you back on sooner.
You know, I'm not just saying this, but, you know, Colleen's one of my, you know, we have this group. I don't know what you want to call it. She's just one of my favorite people.
You're my favorites too.
But you know, there's more to life than taking photographs, and you bring a lot of thought. I think that's why, you know, I enjoy talking with Guy as much as I do, and Michael, and some of the other people who, you know, there's more than just, I hate to say it, but this is what we do, but it's more to life than taking photographs. And you know, it's almost like the photographs are byproducts of how we live in the way
of the experience, yeah.
In this life. Anyhow, thank you for being here. Just hang in when we sign off here for a minute, and we'll.
Sure.
And for those of you who have any questions, comments, what have you? Oh, by the way, hit the like button on YouTube.
Yeah,
nice job, Jack.
Because it helps the algorithm, and here's 10 pro tips to dealing with Colleen. Anyway, thank you all for being here.
I love it.
WeTalkPhoto.com is the website. Comments go to WeTalkPhoto@gmail.com. Let's see. And then we are in YouTube at WeTalkPhoto on YouTube. And we're going to link Colleen's information. Colleen, you're the best. Thank you so much.
You're the best. Thank you. This is a fun conversation.
How can I be the best when you're the best?
How about
John's
debate? All right. We are all the best.
We're all good.
Yeah. All right, folks. We're all the best in our own ways.
In fact, you know who's the best? The people who hung in here to listen to this podcast.
Yes.
Exactly.
We'll see you there.
Bye.
All right. See you later.
Okay, so what's its face? iTunes or GarageBand's on. This is on. I think we're good to go. Looks good. I don't know whether to wear my glasses or not. Just because of the reflection. Oh, yeah. I feel like my eyes are squinty when I don't have my glasses on. It's weird. All right. You ready to go? Okay. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of We Talk Photo. I am John Peterson here with Mr. Jack Graham. How you doing today, Jack? Mid-40s and raining, which is, you know, that's what keeps the Northwest green. So, can't complain. Yeah, and it's just, it's constant. But this weekend, 70 degrees, it's going to be the kickoff of spring. It'll be nice, yeah. Nice. Well, I'll be up there a week after you, I think, doing the doing my workshop. Yep. So Yeah. I mean, 5 years. Yep. Program. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. Well, I think, you know, Jack, for me, it goes back to, if I was to take a big step back, you know, for many years, photography, they've questioned whether photography is an art form or not, right? Is photography art, as it's understood from the classical definition of art? And I think those of us that are photographers would like to think that it is. Great. So, you know, are painters famous for the paintbrushes they use or the paint they use? Are sculptors famous for the chisels they use or how they hold the chisel? No, but my point is that the really great artists are about the end product, not about the tools or the techniques necessarily. There are some exceptions to that, but it's about the creativity and being able to express your vision through whatever artistic medium you have. And I think that's where you and I have always been aligned, and kind of the foundation of this channel is really expressing more of the art and the creative side of this, not the how-to side. No. Yeah, that's kind of what started. I think this whole No. So I got 2 points for you, Jack. Kind of just to tie up the first topic we were sort of talking about, which was creativity and art instead of technical knowledge. And you know, whether you're a beginner, an intermediate, or a seasoned photographer, at some point we have to stop thinking about gear. I think if we want to create art, we have to stop thinking technically and start thinking creatively. And a lot of it's not necessarily about the how to do something, it's about the when to do something and why to do something. And that's why you and I don't necessarily get into the how side of things. We're more into the why and when and learning to see and those types of things. So that's sort of my way to tie up that last topic. But the topic that Jack and I have been talking about a lot lately is the use of the word pro, P-R-O. And, you know, if you follow these tips like a pro does, you're going to shoot like a pro. You're going to be better. And pro, this word pro and tips, there are all these buzzwords to get attention. I get it. But I also don't want people to fall into the trap of just following blindly that these pros says I need to do this and so I'm going to be a better photographer. Uh-uh. You know, so this word has this baggage that comes along with it, and I don't want people to blindly follow it. I think that's my first point is that word's again being overused. It kind of goes in cycles. It kind of goes up and down, and 7 pro tips to do this, and pro dishwasher repair, and Yeah. Oh, easy. Yeah. Yep. Yep, 100%. Yep. Yep, I would agree. I would agree. And it, no, I don't know. I mean, it's it really what professional means is these days, maybe, also is just somebody who, you know, practices more. Somebody who's got a camera in their hands more than other people might. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're better. You know, and so many professional services that we hire, not necessarily better than what I could do myself around the house. So, you know, it's just this sort of advent of or my caution of not putting too much stock in professional as a word to being the end all be all for knowledge. You know, there's, if you're listening to this program, you're obviously extremely intelligent. Okay. So, you know, I know that you have enough knowledge to create beautiful images. And the trick is getting the confidence and knowing when to apply certain techniques and why you do that. It's the when and the why, not the how. The how's easy. The how's just repetitive motion and just a little bit of stored knowledge. Once you get past understanding how to use your camera technically proficiently, now you're into the what, when, and where, and why. Mastering this. No, and what, you know, and kind of what you and I, Jack, always preach to people is, you know, and it, that's the whole thing, like with Lightroom tips and post-processing, we all want to keep learning. That's one of the fun things about this hobby is to keep learning. I enjoy learning new processing tricks, and tips and all that kind of good stuff. But for me, a poorly composed photograph, I can process the heck out of it, and it's still going to be a poorly composed photograph. Yes. Yep, it's still a pig, basically. So, you know, where is the effort and knowledge around creating beautiful artistic images? That's a hill that you and I are continually climbing and have for many, many years. And, you know, we're going to keep climbing it because I think that's the essence, and that's where a lot of the reward for this comes from. You know, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of new people coming in that want to learn the basics and the fundamentals. That's great. We all have to learn somewhere. But once you learn, what's next? How do you be an artist, not a camera owner? Which is... Is it a pro tip? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I have experienced in the last couple of years some folks that are just vapor locked, for lack of a better word. Young kids probably don't know what that is, but us older people, you know, these folks, their brains are vapor locked because they have so much stuff running around trying to jumble and put it together to make sense of this information to execute a photograph in the field. And they just have way too much. So...